you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, and we are back at beautiful Belmont Park. And Johnny D back at his 10 o'clock stanchion. Good morning.
Stevie, how are we doing today? You haven't been at work for a while.
I always love coming here. It's... This is one of the constants, you know. You come here. I'm on this little. Have you? I can't remember if you've ever come here to Belmont. Have you on a Belmont week?
A long time ago. It's been a while. it was before, way before they restricted the crowd. Well before that, I spent a weekend there trying to get out of the parking lot once.
Well, all of us at one time or another have had that experience that basically stuck in the, particularly the Smarty Jones year was tough.
That may have been my last one. That may have been.
I that makes sense to me that was your last one.
Yeah, I learned my lesson quickly.
they've gotten better about it, about the exit strategy, and of course, you know, having 50 or 60,000 here versus 120, I mean that was madness that day. I mean that was just ridiculous. But and they adjusted ever since then.
But yeah, and Belmont Park is such a magnificent, beautiful place. You know, and the history of our sport, the massiveness of Belmont Park is just, I mean, it's the majesty of the San Gabriel Mountains at Santa Anita. When you look out and you just take it all in, how beautiful it is, and the swaying palm trees and the infield, and, you know, you just suck that all in, and it just kind of envelops you, the feeling, the breeze, and the beautiful blue sky and the mountains. It all just kind of and then when you get to Belmont, you look out, and just the majesty and the size and the scope of, you know, the grandstand and that racetrack. It's just, you know, the turf courses inside of it, and it's just, wow. It's really, I think each racetrack has its, you know, kind of a, I don't want to say, it's not attraction, that's not the right word. It's aura, maybe aura is the correct word. Because when you walk into Saratoga and you feel that history, that ancientness, you feel, and you look at that grandstand and you see all the wood and think, man, this looks like it, which it looks like it's been here 200 years. Not quite, but close. And each track is different, and you get the feeling each time. You know, you go into Del Mar, you get that breezy ocean kind of light and easy feeling, and you look off the corner of the grandstand, and there's the Pacific Ocean out in the distance, and the train tracks running by Dog Beach. It just, each place has its own aura, personality, maybe that's, and you just...
Yeah.
You're enveloped by it. You know, it's special. But Belmont and Santa Anita have that boom. Like you're just overwhelmed by the beauty, by the massiveness, the majesty. And then when you add running horses to the mix and colorful silks on jockeys, and the speed and the excitement of the game. You know, if you want to show someone racing, if you want to get them involved in racing, those are the places to take them. A couple of them. I mean, there's many others, too.
Well, and it's a point really well made, Johnny. You know, the defining characteristics of each place. And I can remember being with Benny Stutz. And Benny hadn't been here in years, and I can't remember what the why it obviously had to do with his cult, but we were up in the fourth deck, and he was pointing out, you know, the poles, and just when you're down on the low level, I'm on track apron, you got the stretch, you got the tote boards and so forth, you really do not get a complete understanding of the breadth of this place unless you're at least one deck up, and the higher you go, the more expansive it is, and just, I mean, shockingly so, just that how big the mile and a half oval, really is. And in fact, whenever we get here, a lot of times over the years, and you must have heard any number of these conversations, and they've been with Kent DeSormo, they've been with Gary Stevens several times. Gary Stevens has explained, and Mig talks about it, about the turns so sweeping that if you aren't familiar, they don't even look like a turn. You don't even know you're on a turn. That's how gradual they are, as opposed to any other racetrack.
And the one thing that sticks out in my mind from talking to jockeys over the years is you think it's time to move, wait. And then you want to move again. No, no, no. Just wait before you make your move. And that's an interesting point. I don't know if you want to talk Belmont later or whatever, but it's an interesting point leading up to the Belmont Stakes is Sonny Leone. Coming to Belmont. And I'm sure he'll have a ride, or I'm not sure, but I'd assume he would have a ride earlier in the card somewhere to give him an idea of the racetrack. But that's really not going to do it. You know, one tour around the campus is not going to show you, you're not going to know all the shortcuts. So that really is kind of an interesting, overriding the whole question of what do you do with this horse. You know, this upset of all upsets Derby winner who skipped the Preakness has worked very well since, has looked awesome since, and now comes into the Derby, into the Belmont with a rider who I don't think has ridden at Belmont. I don't know. He may have, I guess. Maybe I'm wrong about my assumptions. I don't think he's ridden much at Belmont, but maybe he has. Maybe back in the early. I don't know. I don't think he has. Do you know?
Sonny Leone?
Yeah.
No. He does have a mount on Friday. I know he got named. Oscar Barrera named him on a, but it's a inner turf. It's just an inner turf sprint. So I'm gonna.
Yeah.
No, that's not gonna get it done. They got to get him on the main track, and they got to get him. You know.
Look, anyway, the point is, they call it horse race. They don't call it jockey race. So if you're on the best horse, you'll probably get it done anyway. But it is a big part of the equation. And if he happens to be a shortish price, which I think he will be, just based on his recent success, I think Nick Tamaro had him at 3-1 on his early line that I saw on Twitter, and Nick admitted, I don't know what to do with him. I don't know how people are going to treat him, but at a short odds with a jockey who maybe hasn't been around Belmont at all. That's probably, you want to go a different way. Even though the horse is doing very well, and you probably want to say, look, this is one of those, I didn't go to the wedding, I'm not going to the funeral. One of those kinds of situations where you missed him at 80-1, now you want him at 3-1, but who knows, because he really, his workout was sensational at Churchill. I shouldn't say who knows. That's what we're trying to figure out. We're supposed to know.
Oh, yeah. Right. I'm sorry, Johnny, a patron who's looking for the box office just came, and that was the cutest question ever. He said, is this where they're going to run it? Yes.
that wasn't Sonny Leone by any chance.
No. It may have been Leone Spinks, but it wasn't Sonny Leone. That was very funny. Is this where they're going to run it? Yes. Yes, this big mile and a half dirt. Well, there was a point where they considered using the. There was discussion of using the training track, actually, turning the training track building into a simulcast center and using that for winter. Some winter racing that was a topic, but they're not going to run the Belmont there. No, I was trying to figure out where he would go for the box office on a dark day like this. So I sent him to the racing office.
He'll find his way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's
could
the thing about it. Well, you sure can. I mean, you can, yeah, and you know, it. I'm just old enough, Johnny, to at 62 to have actually had a chance to be here with my grandfather, particularly when there was no simulcast and there wasn't ADW, and so you'd come, and if anybody was going to bet, they had to come here to bet, and so I've been here on brisk days where, as opposed to just Belmont days even, because I didn't start coming to Belmont's until probably, I guess the late 80s, really. And then I was, yeah, that's about right, so the late 80s. But I mean the era when the activity was all through the grandstand, including the barbershop. You know, there was a full-time barbershop on the grounds in the building. And there's going to be a new repurpose of this building with other activities. And one thing, in fact, Jay Pribman, who has not been here in 3 years, so Jay had not seen the layout with the new hockey arena with the UBS, and it's now, with the trees growing and with the landscaping being done, you know, between the arena and the track, people are going to be very surprised at how beautifully the arena fits in. And long term, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, there's going to come a day when Aqueduct is going to be gone and racing will be here, you know, three quarters of the year. And the building is going to have, you know, there's a million, Dave O'Rourke told me, there's a million square feet of usable space in this structure. A million square feet. So there could be office suites, condos. I mean, there's all potential. There's an unlimited potential of what these grounds are going to end up being long term.
Yeah, I don't know much about real estate, but that sounds like a lot.
Yeah. Exactly right. So, and they're going to start employing the infield here as well. They're building the tunnel, and they got the clearance for that. And so there's a new era that, you know, is going to be different long term. But it's funny, whenever anybody asks me my favorite track, I say Belmont and Santa Anita. But I say, in terms of, you know, the ability to go regularly, more regularly, it's here. And they're surprised that I prefer this to Saratoga. But they're Saratoga's great, but I just think of it differently than I do here. This is an unbelievable place. Yeah.
A bunch of guys used to go up for the Belmont Stakes every year. A couple of years in a row we went. Before everybody kind of splintered off and went to college, different places. So it was pre-college. It was probably early 70s, but did not include Secretariat's race. I was not there for that. But before that, we used to take a trip up, and we'd be in the on the benches down on the apron there. With, I don't know if it's still the same, but there were like benches there. I remember benches, and I remember us bringing coolers in and whatnot. There may have been some, I know maybe one or two of the guys might have been doing some underage drinking. It's possible. I couldn't testify to it, but I think there may have been some underage drinking at the time. But it was a great weekend. We'd all go up to, you know what? It might have been college. It might have been early college, because one of the guys had a place on Long Island, and we'd go up for the weekend, and we'd make a weekend out of it. We'd do the Long Island thing and then go over to the races. So that would be kind of 75, 76, those years.
Wow.
I was wrong. So that would have been virtually legal drinking, actually. Bordering on legal drinking, now that I think about it. Of course, those days of...
What's your...
your own stash.
Johnny, what... Well, and you can. I know people were upset that they the beginning of the meet they said we couldn't bring full size coolers, but people can bring personal size coolers like six pack. You can bring like a six pack cooler in. You can't bring the big roller, yeah. You know, the vending machine size coolers.
like at the Preakness, when they used to have the neighborhood kids would have the shopping carts full of cases of.
You sure?
And I saw them reel in, I am not kidding, reel in a keg.
Sure.
Yeah, right? I mean, I don't remember seeing that at the Belmont, but, I mean, it got to a point, though, the Preakness, where they had to stop it. It just became a terrible liability for everyone.
Well, we had, you say that, and I can remember, there's certainly some people that have come to Saratoga from a certain era that grew up or lived in and around Utica and used to come to Saratoga with a Matt's beer ball. Raise your hand out there. I want to see you on Twitter. If you brought a Matt's beer ball to Saratoga, Matt's Brewing, Utica Club, FX Matt. And they had this plastic ball with a little plastic decanting hose, and it was in a cardboard box. It was a beer ball, and you used to get it. There probably were 40, probably would tap 40 beers out of a beer ball. That was the greatest. Yeah. It was easy to carry with, you know.
Yeah.
What you would do is the cardboard, you could pack the cardboard box with ice. To chill the ball. That was the greatest. Matt's beer ball. Should name a horse beer ball.
You could still bring stuff in at Belmont, your own stuff?
Yeah, you could bring a personal size cooler. Those little six pack coolers, like the ones that they give away as door prizes at Saratoga.
Well, maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll go up there and just bring a little personal carrying case.
Now you're talking.
and lay down somewhere and with the racing form all covering my face and just lay down. Which, one of my favorite times in college, I went to college very close to Santa Anita. And what my college sweetheart, who became my wife and was the mother of my only child, we would on Sundays, because we usually had some kind of athletic event on Saturday, on Sunday we would get the LA Sunday Times and go to Santa Anita and bring a blanket and stretch it out there in the infield and bask in the sunshine and read the newspaper, she'd read the newspaper, I'd read the racing form, and, just have a great afternoon at the races. And I can remember, and I laugh about this now, I would have, $25. And that would be for, I'd get a hot dog, I'd get maybe a beer, and, they were $5 exactus back then. I couldn't do too much damage there. I mean, how did I do it? How did I get through a day with $20? With a date. Of course.
Well, that's Johnny. That's one of the unsung qualities. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, in Cincinnati. Cincinnati Magazine, or the Inquirer, maybe, They named, they had a list of, I don't know, this is probably about 6-7 years ago now, but when Turfway was doing like $1 Friday night promotions, either the paper or somebody named, I think the magazine, I think Cincinnati Magazine named Turfway the best bargain date in the tri-state area, and for that reason, that, you know, beers were a dollar, hot dogs were a dollar, admission I think was either a dollar or free, and you know, if you had another $20, you know, and you portioned it cleverly, you could make a few bets. I mean, I've said that before about a great, it's also a great first date. At least I always found it that way. That, you know, if I brought somebody to the track, they would be, and they'd never been, they'd be, you know, wide-eyed, because it's a spectacle.
It is. And there's so many questions from people, because they know so little about it, you know? Everything brings up a question, you know? And so much information, that's why they're wide-eyed, because they've never seen anything like it before.
It's because there is nothing like it. And, of course, that also, you know, there's also that, you know, you talked about, you know, the jockeys and the silks and the color. And this one thing we've talked about that feels like an opportune time to mention it, and especially in view of that fire at Suffolk last week, there's this certain percentage of the public that supposedly have, you know, racing's interests at heart, but they say getting rid of the C tracks and getting rid of the low level, that we'd be better off. No, actually, we wouldn't. And the fact is, if you don't have a gateway venue and a place for people to see the spectacle live, because frankly, people who come to a racetrack the first time, whether it's Finger Lakes, Belterra, Fairmount, Retama, it doesn't matter. They don't know the difference between a nickel claimer and the Derby. It's just as exciting when two or three horses are headlong to the wire, whether they're running for, you know, a purse of 10-5 or a million and a half. And not having racing in major jurisdictions is a real problem, because you're not going to have a way for people to be introduced to the game and become intrigued. And not everybody, you know, not everybody's going to some college and is going to be at the Tri-Delt Mixer at Keeneland.
Your point about live racing is an excellent point, and we have to remember that. Live racing, it's the horses. You know, we've talked about this before. It's the horses, it's the thoroughbred athlete that people are attracted to. And the jockeys, certainly, and their skills and their colorful silks. But it's the thoroughbred, the thundering thoroughbred. When they go by you, and you feel that speed and that strength and the beauty, I mean, it's just, that's what makes the game. I mean, look, it's a gambling game, and there are a lot of gambling games, but this one involves a living, breathing animal who is a tremendous athlete on top of it. So, you know, what's the difference between betting on the Indy 500 or betting on a horse race? Is there a difference? Well, I think if you go to a thoroughbred racetrack and you stand on the rail and you look at the horses in the paddock and then you go out and watch them race by, I think you'll have a different feeling than you will watching those cars fly by you. I think there's more beauty. Look, I'm not knocking car racing, auto racing. Excuse me. I'm just saying that that the beauty of thoroughbred racing overwhelms a person, and especially a newbie, a person who's never been there before. If you can get them up close to a horse, that's what locks them in. I always thought that, I don't know how you would set it up. And a lot of tracks have free admission. Some tracks have free admission now anyway. But if they don't have free admission, I always thought a great promotion would be people that bring a newbie. You know, bring a new person to the track. And, of course, you wouldn't be able to prove that they were a new person. They can lie to you very easily. But, you know, ask them at the gate, are you a new person? You've never been to a racetrack before. And have them say no. But just have a lot of guys are just going to bring their buddies with them. All right. You're going to get that crowd, but that's going to increase your crowd anyway, so that's nice. But you're also going to get some new people to visit the racetrack. And I think once you expose people to the racetrack, they'll come back. They'll come back because what happens there, first of all, it's foreign to them, and a certain segment of that number of people that you bring are going to become really interested in it because there's so much to learn about it. And there aren't that many, entertainment venues that you can go to where you have a million questions. Like if you go to a concert, well, okay, there's a show, whether it's a comedian or a singer or a dancer or whatever, musicians, whatever. All right, we know what that is. You go to a ball game. Yeah, baseball, we all know, we've learned since we were little kids. Football, we kind of, unless you're bringing someone who's never been to a game, and they'll have some questions about it, but not, they know a little bit about football. They've grown up in the United States, they know a little bit about football. The racetrack, they know nothing. They are like, it all just, as we've been talking this whole conversation, it overwhelms them. They're wide-eyed. You're right. That's the phrase. And so many questions. What is that? How do you figure out who's going to look at this? Well, how much does jockey play? Where do the horses come from? It just starts and it never stops. So forget about betting that day when you bring somebody because you're answering questions all day anyway.
Well, the other part of this is making money. And on that topic, Johnny, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the opening hour with 83-1 Chucky Lawrence and 40-1 Eric Foster. But
I
am curious.
I did.
Well, the question begs, and part of this question came out of yesterday some exchanges on Twitter with John Ardoon, and it also those exchanges with John, because he had the right sheet horse player thought process, which is at 40-1 in the case of Kittadan, at 40-1 you don't ask questions. You recognize this horse has got the best figure in the race, and if he runs back, which came two back, if he runs back to that performance, he can win this race at this crazy price. And a lot of Jerry Brown's guys, when we would run the Saratoga seminars at the barbecue, at Carolina Barbecue, on Saturdays and Sundays, and Bill Spillane and Jerry and Alan Benowitz and Julian Weinberg, all the classic curmudgeonly sheet players. I mean, Julian and Alan Benowitz too. They only play 30-1 shots. And 40-1 shots that have a chance.
It's funny because I got to know Julian because he came to California and was one of, I don't want to call it the sheep's pioneer, the thoroughbred pioneer in California.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. No, no, he's on the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, and he exposed all of us to it, and excuse me, and I we spent quite a bit of time together, and he had some great stories about, you know, you talk about playing long shots. You're absolutely right. He loved, and he told the story about one night. I apologize. I don't remember his wife's name, but he told the story about they were out one night at an OTB, I believe. I don't think they were at the track. They're an OTB somewhere, and he made a tremendous score on an absolute, you know, huge bomb in some exotic fashion. Won a great deal of money, and he's sitting there, and he's got the tickets, and he's got a bunch of tickets, and he's rifling through the tickets, and his wife says to him, oh, we can go here, we can take this trip, and we can buy this, and we can fix the back room, we can do this to the house, and we can that. And she's going through all the things they can do with the money, and he says, or we could buy more of these, and he held up the mutual ticket. I absolutely enjoyed Julian. He at one point he had a stroke I think he was still in California, because he told me this story in person. And it was in the morning, and he got up, and he said, I was doing my work, and then I didn't feel right, and I couldn't, the paper didn't look right in the pen, and he said he didn't know what's going on, and my face was numb, and he's explaining to me the story of what happened. And I said, well, man, I must have been going wild, or what would you think it was? He said, my head hurt, and I was busy and disoriented, and so I called my friend, and of course he's got a great New York accent, and I called my friend, and my friend's a doctor, and I described my symptoms to him, and he said, Julian, he said, you've had a stroke. He said, you get to the emergency room, right? You call 911 right now. And so, I hung up the phone with him, and I put in my bets, and I called 911. I said, whoa.
Back up.
You put in your bets? He said, I put in my plays. I put in my plays, and I called 911. I said, wait a minute. You put in your plays. What then? You called 911. He said, well, I had a few I really liked that day.
He's the greatest. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I'm sorry.
Well, you know, that's tremendous. That was fabulous. And I'm sure Jerry knows it, but I'll pass it on anyway. That philosophy, Johnny, and it's funny. It's really not something we've talked about. At least I don't remember having a conversation about this in particular, which is, if you're betting 30 and 40 to 1 shots that have a look, obviously your strike rate does not have to be what it is if you're playing 9 to 2s and 4 to 1s. And that is their mentality. That is what Alan and you know, Jerry to a lesser extent, because Jerry plays a lot of multis, so he's quite willing to take the number on shorter prices and building multi-race tickets. But in terms of win punches, those kinds of horses, and they don't have to be 30 and 40. They can be 20 to 1, 18 to 1. You know, let's say horses from, I don't know, I'd say about $40 and above. So call it 20 to 1. That's an interesting discussion as an ongoing approach. essentially.
That's something that the first time I kind of, it was tournament play, kind of, in a way,
yep,
showed me that,
yep,
you should look past the short prices. That you can and you should, but you can. You know, you can look at a horse and say, you know, this horse is, whether it's a sheet or, you know, it's a Starograph sheet or whatever it is, and you look at it, or past performances, and you look at it and you say, you know what? This horse is not that far off the favorite. And so, why would I take 5-2 when I could take 8-1? You know, even if we avoid going to the 30-1 level, you know, why wouldn't I take 8-1 on something that's not that far removed? Now, you are going to have to give up some comfort. In other words, the pace might not be exactly right for the 8-1 shot. The last race might be not good. The win percentage of the horse might not be sterling. There are certain things you may have to give up in this process, but if 4 or 5 other things are close to the favorite, why not? You know, they have to run it. And if we've been taught anything in this last couple weeks, it's that, you know, huge upsets occur, even at the highest level of our game. And, again, we should be glad that upsets occur, because that's what keeps fields, even though they're getting shorter and shorter, that's what keeps fields at, you know, a higher level, because people take shots. A guy's horse is doing well. He's performing better in the morning. He's kind of like your first guest, trainer Lawrence, said that, you know, always thought this horse had ability in the morning. He just maybe had his mind on something else, on the girls, I think is what he said.
Yeah.
And then started to come around, you know, and, you know, it happens. These, again, we make our wagers off of past performances. But today's performance might be the day that one of the other guys steps up. So why not take a price if he doesn't look that much, you know, worse than the favorite? And really, that's what Thoroughbreds sheets give you the opportunity to see: the development of a horse, the pattern, not only just the numbers, but how the horse arrives at those numbers and starts to develop. I think you said you sent out the sheet, but I didn't see it. I didn't see you tweeted it out, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to look,
yeah,
you know, since I heard you say that you sent it. Here it is. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then you said you sent the other horses, the other. All right, I'm not seeing it.
Yeah,
anyway,
I sent up on Saturday night. I put up after Foster's horse won, after Kittadan won, I put up Kittadan, so.
Right, I see Kittadan. But the point is, it doesn't take a lot. It shouldn't take a lot for you to believe, you know what, this horse, this 8-1 shot, 10-1 shot, if you're getting 15-1 on a horse, you're not going to see everything line up. But tournaments taught me to look for those kind of horses, and a good tool for finding those kind of horses is something like a Thoroughbred, you know, a Thoroughbred sheet, and it's more easily seen, I guess is the way to put it.
Well, Johnny, Coming up to the top of the hour, Cherie DeVoe is going to join us. We don't have a Belmont field in order yet. It looks like a nine horse field, and I'll post or link up to your, you know, to the analysis that you come up with. But any early feel for what you have tracked? I mean, right now it's funny. I just retweeted Nick Tamaro, who had a funny take, which was Belmont looks like We the People, and then eight closers. So that's why last week when I was talking with Sid, we talked about Rich Strike maybe being aggressive with him and getting him involved early and letting him gallop around. And to be competitive that way rather than trying. And certainly his workout was much more speed-oriented, you know, from the outset than his one that he turned in pre-Derby, where he was slow early, fast late.
Yeah, I agree. The workout was much different. He looks like a different horse. He's acting like a different horse. But, it's so rare that a horse can change his style and be as effective. It's just so rare. This is a dead stone closer who got a tremendous pace to run into. I don't think they can turn. There are so many things about Rich Strike that are question marks for me that I can't rely on him to come back and do any and maybe win the Belmont. I just can't do it. We the People, you look at the Peter Pan and hey, it was over the Belmont track, which is a big plus. It was over a good surface, which I don't know what we're going to have Saturday. He is the only speed. But sometimes when these open length wins, when a horse gets an early lead and they just draw off, you have to kind of discount it a little bit. But he might get the same trip Saturday. He might go to the front and just be able to dictate things himself and leave him behind. Mo Donegal. You have to look at him. You have to consider him for sure. Excuse me. He's just a good horse. He doesn't come from 100 miles back. He doesn't have to. And Creative Minister doesn't have to be 100 miles back. And he's improved in every race. Beyond those, there are four horses you have to look at. And if you take Rich Strike out, there are three you have to look at. And one of them has a speed edge. We the People has a pace advantage. And Mo Donegal is a really good horse. And Creative Minister is going to be in a pretty good spot. I think he's the one that could be laying closest to that group. I know there's no earth-shattering news there. That's just the way I looked at it so far.
What do you make of the filming?
I was just going to say, yeah, I know Todd's done this before, and he knows what it takes. I just think she's a really, really good filly. I don't think she's one of those kind. That's just my guess. It's worth a shot in the race, but I don't know if she's quite that good. Maybe I'll end up using her in exotics at some point, but I don't know. I have to do more of that thinking. But on the surface, it would be trust in Todd would be the way to go. He's done it before. He knows what it takes.
Well, this in her corner, she's by a Belmont runner-up out of a daughter that was by a Belmont winner. So if you're looking for the stamina angle, it is there. And I hadn't noticed until now, really. I don't know why this hadn't caught my eye. She was bred by Ashview and Colt's Neck. What was she? 350,000 as a Keeneland yearling. Looks like maybe book two. I don't know. I I've always, you know, when I would write up, Johnny, when I would write up the Belmont analysis, whenever it came to Todd's starters in this race, I would always stress, you know, his record. I mean, for everybody that dumps all over him about his Derby record, which I find completely stupid and ridiculous, if anybody actually looked at the horses that Todd brought to the Derby before he won, most of them were middle distance horses and sprint type, 7-furlong mile sprinters that he had managed to, you know, earn enough graded earnings to get into the Derby. So, I mean, a lot of them weren't winning the Derby, you know, on the back of a flatbed. But his ability to identify a horse for this race is astounding. And his record is, I mean, I haven't looked of late, but even when he doesn't win, the horses that he brings to this run well. And so he's not, and it's not like, I mean, Mike Rapoli and Aaron Wellman and Eclipse,
they don't leave the run here. No,
they really don't. And so it's not a personal pique that's involved here.
And the other positive, while we're talking about positives, is she's got a little pace, not a lot, but she's got a little, and it ought to be kind of spread out, you know, in the early going. Not one of those the hustle and bustle, you know, where she's caught in between horses, but they might string out a little bit early. That's a positive, I think, for a filly against the male. But again, you have to look at Todd, as I said, trust in Todd, because he could pull the upset. And if she is, we'll get back to price again, which I think Nick Tamaro had her 8-1 on his line. That's a reasonable price, you know, if you're looking for something a little juicier. But we have time. But I agree with you. I'm going to take a further look at it. All good points made here.
Johnny D, everybody. Johnny, I appreciate it, and I'll look forward to a multi-tiered Johnny D Belmont Stakes wagering approach.
You know, I forgot to tell you last week, you know, Memorial Day weekend, we had the family and everything, and Ray Liotta had passed away earlier in that week, and we got around to discussing with my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, and I said, well, you know, Goodfellas, he was tremendous. That's like one of the greatest mob movies ever. It's such an entertaining, and they said, well, we haven't seen it. I said, oh, you haven't seen it? I said, well, it's a great show if you get a chance. And they said, well, mob movies, we don't really like mob movies that much. And we've only haven't watched Godfather 1 or 2 all the way through. I said, I have to leave. I can't sit and talk to you people anymore. I have to leave.
What kind of people are these? Exactly. What kind of people are those?
They are, they're wonderful people. They're nice people. Very nice people. They're vegan.
No, they're not. There's something wrong with them. They're vegans?
Yeah, they're vegans. I said I can't talk to them anymore. I have to leave.
Since you mentioned that, I will bring up with all of the craziness and carrying on over this sequel of Top Gun. I did see some people being admonished for having not seen the original. I have not been able to ever watch the thing start to finish. I don't think I've ever gotten more than about 25 minutes. I just can't watch it. It's just, I don't know why. It just And it's not like I don't like, it's not like I don't like, you know, that kind of film.
Is it Tom you don't like?
No, I don't have a problem. I mean, I find him creepy. I mean, really creepy. But he's...
You don't like Kelly McGillis? What?
I do like Kelly McGillis, and I like Andrew. What's it? Is it Andrew McCarthy? Is that Goose?
And I
like Val Kilmer.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay. Well, they say you don't like Jet.
I loved Officer and a Gentleman. That's got jets. right? They want to be jet. They want to be jet pilots. Got nowhere else to go. You ain't going to be no officer.
All weekend, when I heard that Ray Liotta passed away, all I could say was, Karen!
Well, all right. If you're going to do that, then I have to tell a Karen and Janice anecdote.
Okay.
Have I ever told this on the air?
I don't think I've heard it. No.
Okay. When I was working at Dan and Yogurt in White Plains on Westchester Avenue, the headquarters, I started to date a girl named Karen Papp, and I had previously. The previous 6 years from my days in Kansas City, my previous long-term girlfriend was named Janice Rovick. And I have a bad habit of staying in contact with every girl I ever dated.
By the way, what's wrong with you?
Well, I've stayed friends. I mean, unless their eventual husband, is some sort of, some sort of cretin. There'd been some off and on situations with Karen. So she and I, anyway, Janice was, she wasn't in proximity because she was in Kansas City, but. Here's the point. We're watching Goodfellas, and of course Karen is Henry's wife, but he's got that girlfriend on the side, Janice. And so when this whole Karen Janice, and she's whacking me in the theater. She like I'm I got something to do with Karen and Janice. Sure enough, word starts to spread of Ray Liotta's passing. I get a text from Karen. She says, Ray Liotta died. Yes, Mr. What does she say on the intercom? Yes, Mr. Super, I want you to know you have a whore living
a whore.
Janice Rossi. God. Well, and I mentioned to people last week, too, Dominic and Eugene, if you want to see him in a different kind of role, where Tom Hulsey is his mentally challenged brother. They're Italian kids in Pittsburgh. Was that Society Hill, I think, right? Is that the Italian neighborhood? And he's a med student, and Tom Hulsey's a garbage man, and it's very sweet and really good. Dominic and Eugene, if you've never seen it.
Well, Mr.
That's all you got? Well, we've whiled away an hour. You did it to me again, Johnny.
Yeah. I did it to you again.
And actually, Casey just texted. He's never seen Top Gun either.
he says the movie
it's
with...
Look, it's not... I mean, it's not one of those... It's just a fun movie, and if you're not having fun watching it, don't watch it. It's not earth-shattering. It's, you know... It's just one of those fun kind of, It's predictable. It's, you know, it's everything you thought it would be. Although I did hear that Kelly McGillis, they have a love scene in the movie, but she had already started to do another picture, which I think was the one with the one about the Amish.
Witness.
Witness. She started in Witness. She's a brunette, but in Top Gun, she's a blonde. And she'd already started to shoot Witness, but they wanted her to come back and do some scenes. So they had to shoot him almost in the dark. You can't tell what color hair she has. It's kind of in the dark. And that's why they had to do it that way.
Aren't you a regular Rona Barrett? Good job. I never heard that. We've got...
Well, Now you have
to. You got to watch it for that?
Well, this is all right. You can say when the scene comes up, you can tell the story.
Well, and Casey is making a case for everybody that's going to decide about whether they're going to watch Top Gun, the original. Casey's putting in a big plug for Iron Eagle, the Lou Gossett vehicle.
Iron Eagle? I don't think I've happened across the Iron Eagle.
I've seen Iron Eagle, and it's quite good. I tell you what, okay. Do you want the best? I'll give you an air battle movie that people may not have seen. It's old, and it's actually a World War One fight, air fighting. But the Blue Max. Did you ever see the Blue Max?
I don't think so. No.
Make an effort to see the Blue Max. Is fabulous. The Blue Max with, I want to say George Peppard.
I love movie tips. In fact, Gail and I watched the original Father of the Bride last night.
Which is a lot of fun.
Classic, yeah. All right, I think we've
Johnny.
It out.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground. Here you go. The Blue Max, for those that need pushes on a cast. How about George Peppard, Ursula Andress, and James Mason?
Oh, pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
It's terrific. It's even older than I thought. 1966.
You had me at Ursula Andress.
She plays a Contessa. Johnny D, everybody, with a absolute classic visit. Johnny, we will recap the Triple Crown season next week.
Stevie, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Big time. Johnny D, let's take a break. Cherie DeVoe, I know that Cherie's not going to be upset that we're late because she's home. You're going to love this. She is home doing her filing for the HISA documentation of her horses. She dedicated the morning to doing the HISA paperwork and entering all the horses and all the information. So we'll find out how that went when Cherie joins us next. At the races, we're live at Belmont Park. It's just me and these swallows and also the hawk, the famed Belmont hawk, who has made a couple of swooping appearances already this morning. Back after this.
Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL.